Mark Levine. I used to work in Congress for the Democrats. And my guest is Mike Lane. He's the president of Intellifence Strategies. It's his job to give intelligence to the elephants, which would be the Republicans. There's a lot of things to talk about this week, and as always, we would encourage you to bring up any topic you want to mention. Right here on the Inside Scoop, the number is on your screen. But the five topics on my mind are the following. Al Gore winning the Nobel Prize for peace for his work in combating global warming. The torture memo that the New York Times uncovered just this week, discovering that at the same time that Bush said we're not torturing anyone, he, or at least his administration, was putting forth memos to do just that. There's Larry Craig, the sex scandal Idaho senator, who's decided to stay in the Senate. And it's interesting because Democrats aren't complaining. Republicans are. There is Barack Obama and the flack in some right-wing quarters over the fact that he won't wear a flag, an American flag, very often on his lapel. Finally, there is former retired General Sanchez, who has called the Iraq War a nightmare. Lots of different topics to discuss, Mike. Let's start with Al Gore, because I want to congratulate our former vice president, the man that Americans elected in 2000 to be president, and talk about the fact that Gore has really been a man of peace, someone who's really strived to help the globe in bringing to our attention global warming, while the candidate that lost the election in 2000, of course, is now known as a man of war, George Bush. I frankly wish, as you've heard me say before, I wish Al Gore would run for president, because I think he's the best qualified, and I'd love to see him run. No disrespect to Hillary, but I would vote for Al Gore over Hillary. And I just think this is a moment for him to bask in the sun.
I don't think it's time to count Al Gore out yet.
I hope not. As a Democrat, I'd love to see him run.
You know, the scenario for Al Gore to run was that the Democratic nomination process would still be rather unsettled at this point, and he would be able to come in at this particular point in time, late in the game, the way Fred Thompson tried to do on the Republican side, and be able to capture it and run away with it. Now, unfortunately for him, that scenario is a little bit off-kilter.
We seem to have an heir apparent.
Because, you know, it's not as unsettled as perhaps it might be. Hillary seems to be doing much better than anybody would have thought that she would have solidified the lead at this point. But let's get back to what Al Gore has been doing. First, I'll congratulate him on winning the prize. True confessions or a full disclosure here, the prize actually went to two people. It was the UN Working Group on Global Climate Change.
That is true.
And Al Gore, and my brother-in-law was a member of the UN Working Group.
Congratulations to your brother-in-law.
Well, my sister sent me a note, you know, telling me about what a great thing was, and I sent her one back saying I was still looking forward to seeing, you know, some empirical evidence, you know, rather than this junk science that they're doing.
But that was a joke, I assume. You don't really believe there's not global warming.
Well, let's talk about Al Gore, and then we'll get back to the global warming.
Okay.
No, it's absolutely global warming. Nobody doubts that there's global warming.
I mean,
you were
out looking for the fall colors today, and you couldn't find them because Virginia hasn't turned in October. So, come on.
There's no doubt that there is global warming. The question is, what's the cause? And I think
we'll
work on that. Back to Al Gore. You know, what I'd like to know is, how does what he's been doing translate into a Nobel Peace Prize? Now, I can understand if there was a Nobel Environmental Prize or a Nobel Green Prize or something like that.
They don't exist.
But what does what he's been doing have anything to do with a peace prize? It boggles my mind that I can't find anybody who will defend this.
Look, I think he deserved an award for his work. There is a Nobel Prize.
He got an Academy Award.
Academy Award for his movie. You know, for the best documentary.
Same propaganda.
No. Hey, we're going to get to whether this is propaganda because I definitely want to get there. But to answer your question, look, they have a prize for biology, they have one for chemistry, they have one for economics. It doesn't neatly fit into any of those. When Alfred Nobel set up the prizes 100 years ago, he didn't have one for the environment. I think we do need an environmental prize. Perhaps this will be the start, the catalyst for having an environmental prize. We should have one every year. But I think the reason why he got the Peace Prize, and again, I agree it doesn't easily fit in any category, is because Al Gore did something that helps the entire globe. It wasn't even something that just helps America by any stretch. He warned the entire globe that this is an ongoing crisis, and he, more than any other single individual, and no disrespect to the scientists at the UN, they just don't have the pull that he has.
Right. He's the rock star.
Well, he is. And he, more than any other single individual, notified the world, convinced the world, persuaded the world, the entire world community. And so his work can help nation after nation to deal with this problem, a problem that, after all, if it increases, will lead to nations increasingly warring over tight resources. And one of the things that we fear, for example, is there won't be enough fresh water. There are enough nations warring already over water sources. Things like that will increase as droughts increase, as sea levels rise. I think that what he's done is alert us to something that can be done now so that we don't have limited resources and warring nations in the future. So I do think peace prizes is relevant, though I would agree that it may not be the perfect...
Sort of a stretch here. I mean, I'm hearing your argument.
Is there a better Nobel Prize? I mean, it's not economics. It's not chemistry. It's not biology.
As I said, he won the... He won the Oscar for Best Fiction, so why not just leave it at that?
He did not win the Oscar for Best Fiction.
Let's leave it at that.
The Oscar for Best Documentary. And I think it's very interesting.
Or is it a mockumentary?
You know, you can mock it all you want, but even a very, very scrutinizing judge in Great Britain who found 9 small errors could not dispute the main thesis of the film, which is that global warming is happening and that human beings are causing it. And this judge, who is very, very skeptical of global warming and found 9 small errors, nevertheless said it can be taught to British school children because this is science. Nobody of any repute disputes that global warming is happening, that human beings are causing it.
I think you're sort of casting the British judge to the left instead of to the center where he really was. You can argue about the 9 points that he found that were inaccurate and whether or not those were minor points or major points or whatever. But what he did was the British educational system was going to show this movie to every school child, ad infinitum.
Right.
This is what they were going to do. And one of the parents sued and said, I don't want my son subjected to this propaganda. And the judge said, no, you may not show that movie unless you have educational points that point out exactly where this movie is in gross error on these 9 different points.
But that's the point.
And that they need to be taught simultaneously with the movie.
But here's the point. What Al Gore did was not a political thing. This was not to get Republicans in trouble or help Democrats or anything like that. This was a way to help the world. It is because of Al Gore's work that British school children are learning about global warming. And without him, they wouldn't be doing it. And Britain, which is certainly a country that can be in the forefront of change, can take some action. So I think we've got to give Al Gore a lot of credit. You know, what I like about Al Gore, what I've always liked about Al Gore, is he doesn't just think... Some people criticize Bill Clinton for having sort of a minor program, a thing here and a thing there, things that I like, but were small. Al Gore's a man of big ideas, whether it is the Internet, or it's global warming, or it was arms control, which he was very good at back in the 70s and 80s. This is a man who truly thinks ahead of his time, and that's, frankly, the kind of president I'd like to see.
Well, we'll see whether or not he's inclined to get into the Democratic race.
He probably isn't, and I just have to give up on my dream.
You know what? This is your chance now to...
Run! He'd win in a landslide.
But he'd
win in a landslide. He would get 55% plus of the popular vote.
He might not even win the Democratic nomination, although I think he could wrest it away from Hillary.
I
don't think he'd win in the landslide. I think that the factors would line up against him. But let's look at what he has won here.
Candidates are so weak this year.
Mark, let's talk about the exclusive club that he's joined here, okay? He has just won, as you point out, a misfitting Nobel Peace Prize. Now he joins Jimmy Carter and Yasser Arafat as recipients of this particular thing.
This is so
Do you want to be in that club?
Typical.
Would you want to be in the club
this
with
is
Jimmy
so
Carter?
Typical of
Any time you have Jimmy Carter, I would run so far away. Who's going to get it next? Osama bin Laden going to get it next?
Republican spin. What it is you have this prestigious award.
It's not prestigious. That's the whole point.
Teddy Roosevelt also won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Be prestigious.
So I guess he's terrible.
It used to be prestigious. It's no longer prestigious. It's been so politicized that it means nothing anymore. That's the whole point.
What Republicans do is they take this prestigious award and they point to a couple outliers because they want to diminish what Al Gore has done.
These are not long term.
In 1936,
these are recent.
The Olympics were in Hitler's Germany. Now, does this mean that none of us are ever to celebrate the Olympics again? Were they wrong in 36? Yes, they were wrong in 36. But the Olympics are still a noble tradition. And the Nobel Prize is also a noble tradition.
I think it lowers you
to mock the Nobel Prizes because you don't like the fact that Al Gore is exposing that your friends, the corporations, are busy making a lot of money off global warming while really harming the environment.
Look, what is this Nobel Prize? It used to have a noble tradition. It used to be unpoliticized. Now it has become totally politicized.
What is political about global warming?
It's a bunch of old men in Sweden with no touch with reality sitting there, all talking to themselves.
They didn't give it to Hillary Clinton for healthcare.
Sweden is a socialist nation, and what they are trying to do is they are trying to export their view view of philosophy and political nature on the world, and this is what Al Gore winning this prize is all about.
Why is global warming political? Your party makes it political because it denies the obvious scientific facts. But it seems to me that environmentalists, you have someone from the fundamentalist Christian right who cares about the environment, who teaches that Genesis said that God gave human beings power over the earth. Environmentalism should not be a political issue. Your party should embrace it.
Okay, this morning, in the paper, the headlines, you know who Dr. Gray is of the Hurricane Forecasting Center, the guy who pioneered and the leading forecaster of hurricanes and what seasons will be like in the world. He came out this morning in the headline and then said, you know, years from now we're going to be laughing at ourselves and embarrassed at how stupid we were to buy into this junk science. It's just no empirical reason right now. Empirical is an observable reason.
Let's talk about
there's
observable.
No empirical reason to think that it's man-made. It's just not there, Mark. And
well, okay.
there's no doubt
so
that it's going to happen.
Now you
but
agree
we've always had cyclical stuff. No, I've always agreed that it comes. I've always agreed. I've always agreed that it's happening.
That's new for Republicans.
No.
First they denied it occurred. Now they say it occurred, but it's not man-made.
It's cyclical. It's been happening for millions of years. There's no reason to think it's ever going to stop happening. But there's no empirical reason to think that it's man-made.
Let's talk science.
Okay.
Are you denying that CO2 heats up the atmosphere, that gets stuck in the environment and heats up the atmosphere? Are you saying that carbon dioxide really doesn't cause heat? Your argument?
There is an intuitive grasp that would lead anyone reasonable to believe that the less CO2 we pour into the atmosphere, the better off we are. Don't really, you know, have to just do it willy-nilly. That doesn't mean we have to put our economy and the world economy at risk to go overboard with some pristine...
We don't have to go overboard.
But Al Gore wants to go overboard. Al Gore wants to go overboard. That's the whole problem. He wants people to be out of work is what he wants.
This, to me, is what Republicans do all the time.
No.
They disagree with the solutions until they deny there's a problem.
No, there is we don't know that there's a problem. We don't know that there's a problem.
Virtually every scientist in the world... Now, I realize that you can find some junk scientist that went to Pat Robertson University.
The leading hurricane scientist forecaster in the world this morning in the paper said that years from now we're going to laugh at how stupid we looked at this whole thing. It's just no evidence that it's man-made.
I didn't read what you read, but I can tell you that he is a voice alone in the wilderness. Virtually no scientist says that it's not occurring. And let me suggest to you that I think you gave away when you said, Al Gore wants to do this, that, and the other. You have problems with the solutions, and so you deny there's a problem. How about admitting there's a problem, saying global warming is a fact, saying that obviously human beings are contributing to it, and then we'll work on a solution. Look at what Brazil did, using sugarcane to fund automobiles, which would not only, by the way, prevent global warming, it would also get us out of the Middle East, since we're there to protect oil supplies.
I have no problem with a reasonable program to reduce atmospheric emissions of gases.
That's where we need to go.
Exactly.
So let's,
that's
let's,
where
let's
we
see
need to go.
See, there's a problem, and work together on the solution. I like that. I want you to do that.
An intuitive problem. There's not an observable problem.
The Arctic ice is melting, and the Northwest Passage is open for the first time.
The Arctic ice has been melting for millions of years.
Now, 2005.
Millions of years.
We're going to keep going on this. Folks, I want you to join in, though. Agree with Mike or me or disagree with both of us. It's your turn to answer. 571-749-1166. Right back after this.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Oh, hey,
mister, studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last call.
Oh, no, mister, stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister, what was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetness, sir.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
Back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, former congressional counsel for the Democrats. My guest, Mike Lane, gives strategy to Republicans. We're talking about the issues of the day, and we want you to join in the discussion. The local number is 571-749-1166. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK. Join the debate. Agree or disagree with both of us. We'd love to hear from you. We talked about Gore winning the Nobel Prize. Mike, I want to go on to another I don't know if it's as severe as global warming. In some ways, actually, it's a lot more severe, although it has to do with the United States. It has to do with, really, our perception around the world. There are various techniques that are currently being used by the CIA, or at least it's hard to know what's current. We know they were used back in 04 and 05, that include things like putting prisoners in a cell, naked, in a frigid cell. They would go down to 50 degrees for days on end. We know that the people were denied food. They were denied sleep. They were slapped in the head. We know that they did waterboarding. You know, they simulated drowning. And these techniques were considered by most of the civilized world, I have to say, as torture. The Geneva Convention prohibits cruel, inhumane, degrading conduct. Now, the administration first did these techniques, and then they were rebuffed by both the United States Supreme Court and Congress. The Supreme Court said, hey, the Geneva Conventions apply, which isn't a surprise. You know, according to the Constitution, treaties are the supreme law of the land. We signed Geneva Conventions, and unless we want to get out of them, that treaty applies. And two, Congress, and this was bipartisan. John McCain, in fact, was a real leader in this. They got 90 senators, so that's the majority of Democrats and Republicans, sign on to a law that prohibits torture. The president says, we don't torture. I've never ordered torture. And at the same time, we now know secretly they sign on to a memo, and this was done through Gonzalez and Cheney's lawyer, Addington, and all of them, saying that everything the CIA did just isn't torture. It's not degrading. It's not cruel to keep someone in a frigid cell where they're shivering naked. That's not degrading. It's not cruel to deny someone sleep and food. It's not inhumane to slap someone hard in the face and to do simulated drowning. I hope you're not going to defend the president on this one.
Mark, I'm sure I've been slapped upon occasion harder than any of the prisoners have been. And
I doubt that.
You know what? It's not torture. It may not be the kind of thing you want to be exposed to, but it's not torture.
Leaving someone in a cell without clothes.
You and I have had the discussion on waterboarding on numerous occasions, and no matter what the Congress or the international community wants to describe it as, waterboarding is not torture.
Is it cruel? Is it inhumane and is it degrading?
No, it's a very effective technique of interrogation.
It's not cruel, it's not inhumane, it's not degrading.
It's a very effective technique.
Those are the standards on the Geneva Convention, which the Supreme Court said we have to follow.
What you do is you scare the bejeebers out of somebody that they are about to drown, when in fact they are not about to drown.
That's not
cruel.
It's like attaching electrodes to the genitalia, but not quite turning them on.
No, you're not attaching anything to anybody at this particular point in time.
You're putting cellophane over their face.
What you're doing
is... And dropping water in someone and making them almost suffocate, but not quite.
Normally it's not cellophane. It's usually a wet towel or something like that. But the point is, you are convincing somebody who you are putting at no risk and no jeopardy at all.
Let's talk about risk and jeopardy.
You're convincing them that they are going to drown, and so they cough up all the information because they're scared to death.
I want to hear you make
this
argument.
And you know what? You've never done anything to even put them at risk. It's just not torture.
You're arguing that putting someone in a small concrete cell with no blanket, nothing, stripping them completely naked, and leaving them in temperatures of 50 degrees for days on end until they're literally shivering, at the same time as you deny them sleep by making sure they can't dream, by waking them up every few minutes, and denying them food as well, You're going to argue that's not degrading, not inhumane, and not cruel. You're going to make that argument.
Denying sleep is a time-honored tradition for interrogation. I mean, you know, going back to the 1930s when we made movies about bad guys in cop stations, they denied them sleep, you know.
How about hypothermia?
We're not taking the rubber hose out, and we shouldn't take the rubber hose out.
Is it not
out,
degrading
but,
to put someone naked in a cell in frigid temperatures for days on end?
You know, what's degrading? Certainly, what's you know, degrading? I think the average person would probably, you know, prefer for that not to happen, but, you know.
Let me suggest to you that Congress and the Supreme Court knew what they were doing when they rebuffed this administration. And the administration, if they believed what you say, if they said, leave someone naked in the cell for days on end, then beat them up in the face, deny them food. Remember, their original standard was anything that doesn't cause organ failure is fine. So that would bamboo right. shoots under the fingernails, put them on the rack. Torquemada really never did torture, I'm sure. That was their original standard. They were rebuffed.
And that was over the hill.
They were rebuffed by the United States Supreme Court, this very conservative court, and by a Republican Congress. Now, John McCain said...
And I think everybody will agree that that was over the line, that they had...
John McCain was wrong.
No. Everybody will agree that the memo that he essentially said, you know, anything short of organ failure...
Organ failure or death.
It was over the line.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Everybody agrees with that.
Okay. Post hoc... After that memo was done, and the CIA did all these kinds of things, and McCain's bill, and again, virtually every Democrat supported it, 40, you know, probably 40 out of 50 Republicans supported it. That bill became law. John McCain made very clear that it doesn't include waterboarding. It doesn't include these techniques.
Right.
The Supreme Court said the Geneva Conventions apply. George Bush goes on TV and says, I have never ordered torture. They have a memo that says... Broadly, publicly, torture is abhorrent. And then they have a bunch of secret memos that say, go ahead, gentlemen, do what you're doing, don't change it. If George Bush believed that these practices, which I consider torture, if he agreed with you and they're really not torture, why not come clean to the public and say, here's what we do. It's not torture. We leave people in frigid temperatures naked. We slap them around in the face a few times. It's not torture.
All right. First of all, let me address John McCain. He's a genuine American hero. He served his country honorably and well, and we all admire and respect John McCain for what he did. But the experiences that he had while he was a prisoner in Vietnam have more than colored him and more than bent his judgment on this particular issue.
Maybe it's because he doesn't want American servicemen and women to be tortured the way he was.
And I just think that there should be somebody with a more detached view that would lead the charge on this kind of thing, because I don't think John McCain had a fair, objective, open-minded view on any of this stuff. Now, let me answer your question about the president.
Let me just say really briefly, though, that 90% of Congress voted for this bill, so it's not just John
McCain.
There
are some things that get so twisted and defined by the press that you find yourself in a position where you've got to vote a certain way, and, you know,
the press
there's
is
no way.
Some of us think Americans shouldn't torture, but no, we should torture. It's the president.
Let me talk about the president and what he is expecting. You know, he has a constitutional obligation to protect and defend the United States and the people in it, our safety and our security and our general welfare. When you've got an entire area of people who are desperately trying to bring havoc, death, and destruction. Probably nuclear holocaust to the United States. You do what you need to do to get the information out of these people if they have it, and make sure that you can defend against things not only like 9/11, but you can defend against things that would be 1,000 times worse than 9/11. Knocking down the World Trade Center was one thing. Dropping or detonating a nuclear bomb in the middle of New York City or Washington, D.C., that's quite another.
So you do what you need to do to make sure
that you get the information so that you can prevent this from happening, because we know our enemies are working on this day and night.
This is typical Republican fear tactics, I have to say.
No, Mark, you can't deny that they're trying to set off a nuclear bomb in New York City or Washington, D.C.
And we should try to stop it, but what the experts tell you is you actually can find out more information by trickery than you can by torture, and virtually every expert will tell you that way, and I have no problem deceiving the terrorists. But the problem is, when you torture someone like we did to Mr. Maher Arar, this Canadian citizen who happened to make a mistake to change planes in JFK Airport, we sent him to Syria to be beaten up and with, you know, cables and so forth. And, he turned out to be innocent. And now the Bush administration says he can't sue. He can't sue because we don't want to give away our state secrets.
It wasn't the administration. The Supreme Court said he can't sue.
Well, but the administration, the Solicitor General, Ted Olson, defended the position that
they said that he can't sue because it's a state secret. And if it's a state secret, we can't talk about it. Here's the point.
Right.
And, when you end and up torturing people, you often are torturing innocent people. And at no time in American history have we ever done this. Under the Revolutionary War, under the Civil War, there were times, the War of 1812, the British burned down our White House, and we still didn't torture. Well,
first of all, we didn't torture this particular guy. We may have mistakenly detained him.
We sent him to Syria to be tortured.
He wanted to bring an action against the United States. All the facts were laid out for the court to see, and the court said, no, he may not sue because classified state secrets will be exposed under this, and it's a greater evil to have these state secrets exposed to the world and our enemies.
Let me suggest to you, it's a greater evil now, to torture an innocent person.
You know what's going to happen? This guy's going to get compensated. There's going to be a private... Yes, he is.
He's
going to get
compensated. We're torturing hundreds of innocent people right now.
This guy's going to get compensated.
We don't want to set a precedent.
This guy's going to get compensated. There'll be a private bill that goes through. It'll be a quiet thing. You and I will never know...
You and I
will never know about it, but he'll be compensated.
First of all, private bills are public. I happen to work in Congress, I can tell you.
It may be one of those CIA bags of cash, but it'll be something that compensates.
That's not the way to run a country, where you accidentally torture hundreds of innocent people and then pay them off. Yes, that may be the way to run a Latin American dictatorship, of which there are virtually no more left. But for our country, the United States of America, for my country, to debase itself to say, we don't torture when we do torture, we don't pay off people when we do pay off people, we don't have secret prisons when we do have secret prisons, that is not what America is all about. It's not a country I'm proud to support.
Well, I'm not.
And no country, no amount of American history prior to today, at no time, did we ever do these tactics before? And I hope after this president's gone from office, we never descend to such a low point again.
You know what, Mark? In fact, we did things like this before. In fact, we did things a lot worse than this before. There have been illegal atrocities that have been committed in the course of war over time. Some of which have been rectified. Others of which went unreported.
But do you see a difference between an illegal atrocity by some person in wartime, which has a Mylai massacre and other things, and the President of the United States authorizing torture? I mean, to me, this is what Hillary Clinton had exactly right in her response to Tim Russert. Bill Clinton was wrong, and he changed his mind when she said we can never have a law that allows for torture. Now, you may have the Jack Bauer 24 moment where some guy decides, you know, to save the world and do something, and that person, there'll be jury nullification. But you can't have a policy on that. I know you want to respond to me, and I promise I'll give you a chance.
Let me just
We're
say,
running up on a break.
The president did not authorize torture.
He did, and
the president
the memos did,
not. Did.
Yes, he did. 571-749-1166. Join in the discussion. We'll be right back with more right after this.
Some people in Fairfax County don't know what public access means.
Some think it's just another channel on the dial.
But it's much more than that.
It's the voice of the people.
People like you.
Your neighbors, your friends.
Or your family.
People who want to share ideas.
Opinions.
Cultures. Lifestyles.
Art.
Sports.
Music.
Events. Entertainment.
History.
Science.
Beliefs.
People who want to learn about television.
Producing.
Directing.
Cameras,
audio,
lighting,
editing, or radio, talk, music.
Whatever you think people should hear.
Public access is the place where everyone has a voice.
And it's the place where that voice gets heard.
A place where you can create your own form of personal expression.
So what do you want to say?
Whatever it is,
you can say it here.
Because we're public access.
For the people.
By the people.
It is about balancing our choices between the gray of the concrete jungle and the stunning beauty of the real one, between a stoic facade of granite and the fury of the canyon. It's why there's EarthShare, a simple way to find balance. EarthShare is the workplace giving program bringing the leading environmental groups under one umbrella. Support EarthShare, support them all. EarthShare. Please ask your employer about workplace giving. To learn more, visit our website. Thousands of kids in this country have everything it takes to go to college, except the money. The United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I was reading the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution. I frequently read the Constitution. It is a source of inspiration, where it says that excessive bail should not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. The Constitution says we can't inflict cruel and unusual punishments. The Geneva Convention says we can't do anything cruel, degrading, or inhumane. The United States Congress has said, in effect, we cannot torture. The United States Supreme Court has said Geneva Conventions apply. And George Bush says on air, I've never ordered torture. So to say that, you must believe that putting someone naked in a cell, frigid until he's shivering for days on end, denying him food and denying him sleep, that's not cruel, that's not unusual, that's something that's done all the time in your world, right, Mike?
In fact, most of that stuff is done all the time. You know, these are not unusual interrogation techniques.
By democracies or by Saddam Hussein's Iraq?
They are not unusual interrogation techniques. They're actually fairly effective.
Do you think Great Britain does this? Do you think France does this?
I do, yes.
You do? Do you think Canada does this?
I don't think Canada has any prisoners. I don't know what they're doing. But I think France and Great Britain do it, yes.
Where do we learn these techniques? It gave three sources. The Egyptian secret police, the Saudi Arabian secret police, and guess what? The Soviet Union. We are taking instruction from Stalin's gulag. Thank you, George Bush, for bringing back the evil empire and installing it in the United States of America.
It sounds like they're pretty effective because those security services are known for getting what they want to get out of the
prisoners. Is there no moral compunction here with you, Mike?
This is about protecting the safety and security of the people of the United States.
The ends justify the means. If you happen to torture 500 innocent people, but you get one guilty one, then it's okay?
No, I don't think that kind of out of proportion thing is worthwhile. But I do think there are times when you have to use enhanced interrogation techniques that will persuade the person that you're interrogating that it's in their best interest to give you the information that they have.
You know, it's interesting. And a country that's under a lot more danger and a lot more threat than us, the country of Israel, mm-hmm. used to use some of these techniques until they were declared illegal by their Supreme Court back in the 1990s. They haven't done it since then. And one of the things the Israelis have said is that actually when you torture someone, they tell you what you want to hear, because they just want the pain to stop. And the best way to get information is deception, not torture.
But you're not talking about pain here. You're talking about intense discomfort. When you put somebody in a chilled room and you leave them there until...
Without food or sleep.
That's not pain. That's discomfort.
Have you ever been so hungry that you had pain?
You know, a couple days without food. I've been a couple days without food.
I have fasted too. And you get pain.
It's not something that is on the level
Why
of torture.
Why do we do this?
It's not like you're putting bamboo shoots under somebody's fingernails.
Well,
it's not like you're beating them with a rubber hose or anything like that.
You're slapping them in the face. I mean, that's approved.
You know,
that's okay.
You know, the slap in the face is not torture, Mark. It may be...
Somehow I think it wasn't a light tap.
It may be something that, you know...
Why is this necessary? Doesn't this demean us as Americans?
There are times when you need the information, and the safety and
Who
security
says gonna
of
give the
American people...
Did John McCain turn in... He was tortured brutally. Did he turn in his people? I don't recall him confessing to anything.
You know what? The word on John McCain is that he was able to resist the torture.
And you don't think that Al-Qaeda can do the same?
Different people react different ways. John McCain was an extraordinary individual who apparently had more strength than the average American or the average person would have.
Let me raise one more point on this issue.
All right.
Then we'll move on. But you said Bush did not authorize torture. And Bush says, I don't authorize torture, but I won't tell you what I did authorize. And we now know that, indeed, he authorized all these techniques. If he believed, as you claim to believe, that this stuff isn't torture, why not come clean to the American people and say, honestly, Congress said I can't do this, the Supreme Court said I can't do this, here is exactly what I'm doing, and I don't think it's torture, I don't think it's cruel, I don't think it's unusual, I don't think it's inhumane, heck, I do it to my wife all the time.
Mark, like a lot of things that happen in the...
Well, not unusual. It can't be unusual punishment.
How can I even come up with a serious response to a question like that? There are a lot of things that government does, interrogation of terrorist suspects among them, that are classified, and you don't want to talk about what your interrogation techniques are. You don't want
to. Because he was simply hiding what
no,
he was doing.
It's classified information.
Why didn't he tell Congress?
It's classified information.
Fine. Congress can meet in executive session. Why didn't they tell Congress? They didn't even want to tell the courts. State secret. We're not going to even tell the courts. There are three branches of government. If the reason was simply to keep things classified, they could tell the Supreme Court. They could tell Congress. Why are they keeping it secret from the other two branches?
Mark, you've got a better chance keeping a classified secret telling Dan Rather than you do telling Congress.
I'll tell you something. You can't tell people in the administration. Because we know, for example, that there was it was actually an Israeli woman who put up, she got the Osama bin Laden video, and she told the administration exactly her techniques for getting the video, and lo and behold, it was leaked long before the video came out. So the administration has real problems with leaks. I would suggest to you that a few members of Congress and the United States Supreme Court actually can keep a secret better than this administration.
It's
not about secrets. It's about hiding the ball from the American people.
I would argue that Congress is trustworthy on keeping secrets, but I will concur with you that the leak of that video was a tremendous loss.
It was.
And it shut down numerous sources of information that we had because Al-Qaeda figured out that if we got it early, that meant we had breached their security.
Here's my point.
It was a big problem.
The people that we're torturing know they're being tortured, right? The people that we live, you may not call it torture, the people that were living in naked in frigid cells, they know exactly what's going on to them. All right, they know. Our enemies know. Al-Qaeda knows. Who are we keeping a secret from? Just the American people.
No,
right?
You don't want to tell your enemies what you're doing and how you're doing it because then they can learn to defend
against
it.
They already know. We're doing it to them, aren't we?
I'm sure we have many other interrogation techniques that you and I don't even know about.
I hesitate.
I'm sure we do.
I'm really nervous about them. Let me, in terms, because these kinds of things I have to say, I'm very proud to be an American, but these things do not make me proud of my country. I don't want to go to a foreign country and have to defend these practices because I think they're un-American and I think they should stop.
I don't want to go to downtown D.C. on the mall and start, trying to clean up the remnants of a nuclear dirty bomb or something like that.
You can claim all these things all you want, but there's been no indication of anything like that.
Oh, Mark, that's what they're trying to do. That's what this is all about, is protecting the United States. That's what it's all about.
Okay. Why then?
You think we're interrogating people because we have fun interrogating people? It's not. We're looking for information that will protect the security and welfare of the people who live in the United States because we are under attack.
How about a bill that says we won't torture anyone unless they have knowledge of an ongoing nuclear attack against the United States?
Well, we shouldn't be torturing anybody anyway, and I would hope that...
I don't know. It's an ongoing nuclear attack. Why don't you just threaten to kill someone and then kill them if they don't speak?
If there was somebody that we thought had good information about an impending nuclear attack, I would hope we would use every enhanced interrogation technique that we had to get that information out of them.
Right. But we haven't found a single situation like that yet. Not a single situation. And yet we know that hundreds of people are being forced to undergo these techniques, probably tens of thousands when you think about all the secret prisons and everything we have. Here's the point. Republicans say, it's to prevent an ongoing nuclear attack, and they can't document a single case of torture or enhanced interrogation techniques, what had anything to do with nuclear power or nuclear war. Well, the problem is you give an inch, they take a mile. You say, we can do these things in extreme examples. This is why Hillary Clinton was absolutely right. It can't be part of our laws. You give someone a little bit of leeway, and suddenly it's like, that's an Al-Qaeda person spit at me, so I'm just going to make sure his life is miserable.
If you're going to err on one side or the other, I think it's judicious to err on the side of protecting the safety and security of the American people.
Well, as Benjamin Franklin once said, those who would sacrifice liberty for the sake of security deserve neither. And I agree with Ben Franklin.
And Ben Franklin lived an entirely different time, and he was essentially right for then, and he's essentially right now, but you got to nibble around the edges to make it work for the 21st century.
Well, you know what?
Because
we've
the
never
stakes
had
are much
to do
higher.
It before.
They didn't have nuclear bombs back in Ben Franklin's
but
time.
But this isn't about nuclear bombs. Even the Bush administration doesn't claim that we torture people or we use enhanced interrogation techniques because of nuclear bombs. All right? No one is saying
because
that.
We're trying
That's just
to,
a fear
because
tactic.
We're trying to extract the intelligence out of the suspects who may help us prevent a nuclear attack.
No, it's not about nuclear attack.
It's about a lot of things.
And the best way
it's about the safety and
trickery.
Security of the United States. That's what it's about, the safety and security of the people.
You know, we torture hundreds of innocent people. They can't even get redress. We're copying. I don't think Stalin was doing it for fear of nuclear attack. He may have claimed he was, but when we are aping the former Soviet Union, it's time for the United States to take a good look at itself. And it's interesting to me that in terms of patriotism, I'm going to use that as a segue here, that one of the political candidates
had the audacity to say, this of course is Barack Obama, that he's not going to wear the American flag on his lapel while running for the campaign. He's going to say his patriotism and show his patriotism through what he plans to do to help America. And he was roundly condemned by all the right-wing talk show hosts. Oh my God, he's taking the flag off his lapel. When really all he's trying to say is that you don't, that wearing a flag is a symbol. But real patriotism is shown through actions, not through symbols. And I agree with him.
He may have been trying to say that. In fact, I will grant him the benefit of the doubt that that's what he was trying to say, but that's not what he said. He was, impugning the genuine patriotism of people who wear American flags.
No, he wasn't.
I wear an American flag on my lapel quite often. I don't have one on tonight.
You don't have one on now. Why not?
I don't have one on tonight.
Does that mean you hate America, Mike?
No, because, Mark, you know darn well I was late for the show and didn't have time to find it. So.
Well, no, but you've done many shows without them.
I have, and I've done it
equal
number.
Let me suggest to you that this is kind of litmus test. Oh, my God, you don't wear an American flag on your lapel, therefore you're not a patriotic American.
There's
That's
no,
silly.
There's no requirement that he wear it, but there's no requirement that he disparage people who do wear it. And I think he was doing it.
I think that was what
he was getting at.
I think what he was saying is there's cheap patriotism and there's real patriotism.
Right, and he ascribed people who wore lapels on flag lapels on their lapel as cheap patriotism.
If that's all you do, it is cheap patriotism. If that's all you do for your country is wear a flag on your lapel and you think you've served your country well, then that is cheap patriotism. What he's saying is real patriotism is actions. It's saying what he's going to do as president of the United States. It's doing things to help your country in all kinds of ways, whether it's, you know, for environmental things or serving your country in the military or, frankly, serving on a jury or paying your taxes. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to serve your country. But wearing a flag on your lapel may make you feel better. It doesn't help your country any.
You know what? It's merely an outward symbol as to how you feel. You don't need to express that on your sleeve all the time. You shouldn't disparage other people who do the way Barack did. And let me just note, this has been an ongoing controversy for about 2 weeks now. And in that ongoing 2-week controversy, he's fallen about 10 points in the polls, and Hillary's gone up about 10 points in the polls. I would say, you know, this is a net loss to him. He's not doing very well.
You know, I think it was a courageous thing to say. I agree it was unpopular. I agree it was unpolitical. And I actually give him credit for doing that, because what he's saying is, you know, it's so easy. I remember in the George Herbert Walker Bush Dukakis race in 1988 where George Bush Sr. visited a flag factory and practically literally wrapped himself in the flag. There were thousands of flags behind him. And I remember thinking, cheap political stunt. As if Michael Dukakis doesn't love his country. You have different visions for the country, fine. But, oh, I wrap myself in the flag. I find that a little bit offensive,
Mike Dukakis had the flag on the helmet that he wore with the big mic across the front, you know. I mean, look.
But this kind of political theater, it's not real.
You know what?
Policies are real.
I wish we could get away from the political theater and the backdrops and the visuals for the day and things like that, but we can't. It's a part of American politics. It distracts.
Only for the last 30, 40 years.
It distracts, I think, from the message. Well, you know, essentially since the television age. You know, we didn't do it before the television age. I don't think that in the 60s we had a grasp of it, but since the 70s, you know, we've been doing this. And it's part of American political culture. It does distract from what the message ought to be, but we live in an imperfect world. We run imperfect campaigns, and the visual message of the day is the way people get it.
I think what Obama was saying is, I'm not about an image. I'm about my message, and for that I give him a lot of credit. Coming up after the break, we're talking about Larry Craig's return to the Senate and retired General Sanchez's comment on the Iraq War. Call in and join us, 571-749-1166. Right back after this.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
through Volunteers of America. You can help change lives in your community.
Oh, hey, mister. Studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
Oh, no, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweet and stir.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is the last chance you have to call in and join the show, and I really want to encourage you to do that. You don't have to agree with Mike or me, but we do want to hear from you. 571-749-1166, 571-749-1166. A couple other issues I want to talk about, Mike, that happened the course of the week. Senator Larry Craig, Republican Senator of Idaho, him of the wide stance that he's become very famous for, originally said he was going to leave the Senate by September 30th. Then he changed his mind and said he's going to leave the Senate if the judge does not allow him to withdraw his guilty plea. Well, the Minnesota judge came down with a ruling and said, you're no different from anybody else. When you plead guilty, it means you're guilty. And now he's going to stay in the Senate for the rest of his term. I don't know, maybe he'll run again. What's interesting to me about this story, and we don't have to go over the wide stance, so we can if you want to. What's interesting to me is that it's Republicans universally calling for him to step down. Most of the Democrats are saying, you know, what he did is not as big a deal. Why are Republicans so angry at Larry Craig?
Well, Republicans are angry at Larry Craig because their hopes for picking up control of the Senate, which, as you know, is relatively close.
Their hopes for picking up the Senate are very far.
No, but their hopes for picking up the Senate are set back a giant step if Larry Craig is on the ballot next time. No matter what you want to say about what the guy did, as I look at it, and I don't have all the information, I don't think Larry Craig committed the crime. I think Larry...
He may not have. Larry, he pled guilty.
Larry Craig was very stupid to plead guilty to committing a crime. I think the judge probably erred in terms of not letting him withdraw the guilty plea. I think he could make a strong case that he was, for political reasons, not coerced, but virtually without option on the whole thing, because exactly what he feared was going to happen if he went to trial is what happened. So I think there's a strong case to be made that he should have been allowed to withdraw his plea and have a trial. But the judge said no. The judge said no. Under Minnesota law, you don't get a new trial. You don't get to withdraw your plea. You pled guilty. You are guilty.
Now, why are Republicans only soft on crime when it involves Idaho Republican senators?
Why they
wouldn't allow withdrawal of a plea? People are forced to making pleas all the time in America today, Mike.
All right. I don't think that should happen. But what Larry Craig is guilty of more than the crime that he pled guilty to, if indeed he's guilty of a crime, what he's guilty of is jeopardizing his Senate seat. And in politics, that's a bigger crime than anything else.
If he runs again.
Well, no. If he's still hanging around, he's
going to
hurt a problem.
Even if he resigned, even if he doesn't run again in 2008, you think he still jeopardizes the Idaho seat?
I do. The longer he hangs around, the more problematic and difficult it becomes for
even a Republican in Idaho,
for a Republican nominee
in a very red state. Really?
If I was the Democratic consultant in Iowa, I would already have my candidate lined up, and I would be campaigning against Larry Craig, and I wouldn't even worry about who the Republican nominee was going to be. I would be campaigning against Larry Craig, and I would tar the whole party with the whole thing, and that's the way I would carry on that race. It may not be fair, it may not be honest, but that's what politics is all about. And so by hanging around and continuing to put himself in the headlines, Larry Craig is jeopardizing the seat, which is a major political crime, and he's also allowing unfairly the Republican Party to be tarnished with his indiscretions, and for that reason, his colleagues in the Republican caucus in the Senate would appreciate it if he would follow his own advice and resign.
Look, I don't have any sympathy for Larry Craig. Larry Craig is a hypocrite. Larry Craig,
yes, he is
probably gay and has voted against gay rights consistently throughout his career. I have no sympathy for Larry Craig. I do, however, have some sympathy for other men in his situation. Here it is. I don't know that he committed a crime either. I mean, I soliciting sex, maybe. I'm not sure. There'd have to be a trial.
That's on the record. He had a wide stance.
Right, you know? Well, I think he had a little more than a wide stance. But all the time you have police officers, and let's face it, let's look at who these people, these tend to be closeted gay married men are the people who tend to go to, I just did a whole show on this last week, who tend to go into public restrooms. They are people who are afraid of being outed as gay, mm-hmm. and tend to find furtive sex in all these ways. Let me suggest to you that in a country, in a nation that was more accepting of gay people, you wouldn't have this problem, and that the cops are really preying on a very weak, and again, not Larry Craig, but others, preying on really very troubled people who are in marriages that are they probably shouldn't be in because of society's bigotry, and that these kinds of crimes really aren't the kind that if we had a better society, we wouldn't even have these kinds of crimes.
You know, if your profile is correct, and by the way, I saw your show last week, and it was very informative. I thought it was a good show. If your profile is correct, then yes, you're dealing with a demographic profile of someone who's got
tremendous problems.
Tremendous
all
problems,
kinds.
And essentially the men's room scenario is their only option because they are for one reason or
and
another.
I'm not saying people should have sex in the bathroom.
No, they should.
I want to be very clear there. They shouldn't. No, they should. Children and all those things. But I just want to suggest to you that it's because of prejudice in places like Idaho, because of people like Larry Craig who are helping to foment prejudice,
you know what?
That he got put in the same situation that led to his arrest.
You know what? I'm sure they have men's rooms in Idaho as they would. No. You know what? I think he probably deluded himself into thinking if he just continued this lifestyle out of state that everything would be fine because he would only be recognized in Idaho, and he was probably fairly disciplined about not doing it in those restrooms in Idaho. Look, the guy has substantial problems. One of the reasons why he lived this kind of life, as you point out, they don't want to be found out. More than anything else, he knew he was going to put his Senate seat in jeopardy if he did that. And being a senator, as we see now, is the most important thing to him that he can express. And so he's boxed himself into a corner. And even though I might feel sorry for him, and even though I might have sympathy for him and say we need to help this guy, the fact is he committed the crime. He committed the crime. See, you can't go into public restrooms and have sex under those circumstances.
I don't have sympathy for Larry Craig because he's a hypocrite. But here's the thing: it's Larry Craig when he gave that public interview or whatever after the incident. Instead of saying, talking about I didn't commit the crime or I wasn't trying to solicit sex in the restroom, which is a crime, what he says is I'm not gay. As if being gay were the crime rather than the sex in the public restroom, which after all is a very minor misdemeanor. It's a fine.
I think that's a fine.
Exactly. So here we have a case where the nature of this prosecution, this sting operation, and you have to think about, police officer.
I wouldn't want that duty if I was a police officer.
All day long, sitting in a public restroom. I mean, I don't know that our public resources should be devoted to this kind of thing. But I would suggest to you that if it weren't for prejudice, that it was very striking to me that he didn't say, I didn't try to solicit sex. It's like, I'm not gay, as if being gay were the crime.
Well, two things, Mark. First, you do have to devote public resources to stopping this kind of crime, even if it's defined as a minor, inconsequential, civil, whatever it is. You have to devote the resources to stopping it because a public restroom is a place of public accommodation. And when you've got children going into something like this, it can't be tolerated.
I'm just saying that...
It's quality of life crimes. Rudy Giuliani cleaned up New York by focusing on the quality of life crimes, and this is one of those quality of life crimes. And if you just stop them and have zero tolerance, you're a lot better off.
I'm not even saying people shouldn't prosecute the crimes. What I'm saying is that it's the attitude of, frankly, people in your party, including Larry Craig, who brings up this attitude that leads closeted gay men to marry straight people, which I don't think is very good for either party. And that's something, you know, when the whole gay marriage debate came up and Republicans were asked, what should a gay person do? They never have answered that question. Either they should be celibate, or they should marry a straight person, which isn't good for the straight person.
I don't know anybody who ever said that. I mean, it's possible some wacko out there might have said, well, marry a straight person, you know, get over it or something like that. That's, you know, pretty bizarre comment from my point of view. Getting back to Larry Craig, his real crime here is the political crime of putting his seat at jeopardy. Now, you may say it's all the Republican Party. It's not. In fact, if Larry Craig was running as a Democrat under the current circumstances in Idaho, he wouldn't get elected either.
We have Senator Vitter of Louisiana. He's had an ongoing relationship, apparently, with several prostitutes, which is also against the law. It's also a misdemeanor, like what Larry Craig did or did not do in the restroom. And yet, virtually no Republicans are calling for him to resign.
The voters of Louisiana are a little different than the voters of Idaho.
They did elect Jefferson.
There was no political crime committed by Senator Vitter in terms of his behavior and what he's done.
I mean, in terms of societal damage, I would argue prostitution is actually worse than sex in a restaurant.
But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the political crime of putting your seat at risk or putting your seat in jeopardy, and Senator Vitter did not commit that crime.
If Vitter's prostitute were a male instead of a female, I think your party would be asking him to resign.
You know what? The voters of Louisiana would be the ones who would make that decision. I think Louisiana is a pretty free and easygoing
place.
Why
isn't your party calling for Vitter to resign?
Because he has not put his seat at risk. There's no doubt that Senator Vitter is going to get reelected. The Democrats are having a hard time finding a good candidate against him. The seat is just not at risk. The Idaho seat is at risk. It comes down to a political calculation, not a personal behavior, not a personal foibles. It's a political calculation, and you know, you can't allow somebody, when you're trying to regain control of the Senate, you can't allow somebody who should have a safe seat to put it at risk because it destroys your political calculus.
I think the difference between Craig and Vitter is the same difference between Mark Foley and Strom Thurmond. Mark Foley picked on young interns that were male. Strom Thurmond, and I saw it with my own eyes, definitely sexually harassed young female interns, and that was okay in your party, including what he did with a black maid in the 1920s, raped her or whatever, but what Mark Foley did wasn't. I think that's the difference in your party. You 10 seconds, first one.
Strom Thurmond was not a perfect man, but I don't know that anybody ever alleged that he raped anybody.
He did. I think he clearly did, because it's the 1920s in South Carolina. She was 16, he was in his 20s. That's going to have to be it.
The daughter of the whole thing never alleged that.
Well, that was her mother. We're going to have to do this on another show. Thank you, Mike, for coming on.
afternoon, and welcome to America Back on Track here on the Quality News Network. Another week has started. Monday. It's Monday today, October the 15th. I'm your correspondent, Tony Seaton. In a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Charlotte Ann Lucas. She is a journalism instructor and a new blogger and a journalist as well, and an extraordinary woman. We're going to chat with her about where we get our information and what we can trust. Carolyn Kay is going to be with us in our second half hour, our media observer from MakeThemAccountable.com. Robin Hanson had to reschedule. We'll have him on later this month, I think. Today's Seaton Notes is on Dumb Dems. From all my conservative friends and all you people out there who know that it's not about Republican or Democrat, liberal or conservative, left or right, it's about America and getting it back on track. Our quote of the day is from Man Ray, who said, "To me, a painter, if not the most useful, is the least harmful member of our society." Let me do that again. "To me, a painter, if not the most useful, is the least harmful member of our society." Some observations on the news. One of America's top economists testified before Congress earlier this month. It was not a pretty picture he painted. Robert Kuttner compared what's happening now with what happened in the 1920s. Quote, "When you strip them down to their essence, there are variations on a few hardy perennials: excessive leveraging, misrepresentation, insider conflicts of interest, non-transparency, and the triumph of engineered euphoria over evidence." Kuttner, by the way, is the editor-in-chief of The American Prospect. He was co-founder of the Economic Policy Institute. He explained to the Congressional Committee, quote, "The most basic and alarming parallel is the creation of asset bubbles, in which purveyors of security use very high leverage. The securities are sold to the public or to specialized funds with underlying collateral of uncertain value, and financial middlemen extract exorbitant returns at the expense of the real economy. This was the essence of the abuse of public utilities stock pyramids in the 1920s, where multi-layered holding companies allowed securities to be watered down to the point where the real collateral was worth just a few cents on the dollar, and returns were diverted from operating companies and ratepayers. This only became exposed when the bubble burst." As we reported on Friday, the CIA has launched an investigation into the investigations by its own inspector general. The IG, a fellow named Helgerson, had issued several reviews that made the CIA management look incompetent, bordering, one might infer, on treasonous. The CIA brassdom was very unhappy with the results, with the truth that made them look bad, hence the investigation of the investigator, including looks into files that should remain private. Otherwise, no one will ever tell an inspector general at the CIA or anywhere else.